Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable, high-speed internet. Today, I am joined by Maggie Drummond-Ball, Director of Strategic Partnerships at the Maine Connectivity Authority. Maine was the first state in the country to receive NTIA approval on its digital equity plan earlier this year. We discussed the background work that went into creating that plan, for which Maine will receive over $500,000 in federal funding to implement. We also discussed the details of the plan itself, the steps Maine intends to take to achieve digital equity alongside universal deployment, and what happens next now that the state has NTIA approval. All right, Maggie, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It is my sincere pleasure to have you on today. We are going to talk all about your digital equity plan, which was the first in the nation to be approved by the NTIA. So congratulations. Huge props to you all for that. But before we get into all that, I'd love it if you could tell me a bit about your role at the Maine Connectivity Authority and what drew you to working on broadband and digital equity.
Sure. I'd be happy to talk about that. I've been at the Maine Connectivity Authority for almost 2 years and came into this role as Strategic Partnership Director. So what that means is that I work with a team of folks at the Maine Connectivity Authority who are thinking about the partnerships and the work that we need to do to maximize the impact of our infrastructure investments. So our team works on economic development and workforce development. We're also working on building relationships with communities and regional partners. We're working on building relationships with those nonprofit organizations and funders and state agencies. We're all engaged in work with the people that we need to reach who are most impacted by the digital divide. And I came to this role from a role at the Maine Community Foundation, which is the only community foundation in Maine. And we were doing work at the time to fund rural entrepreneurship and innovation. And of course, as we started to explore some of the barriers that entrepreneurs in rural communities might face, we stumbled into work on broadband access and digital inclusion and launched a broadband initiative at the Community Foundation because of that journey. And that led me to all the folks at the Maine Connectivity Authority and the exciting opportunity to jump into this work at a larger scale, both in Maine and through our national network as well.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So let's talk about the digital equity plan. Of course, the Digital Equity Act is like a companion piece of legislation to the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, the BEAD program. And so state broadband offices across this nation are currently hard at work trying to get approvals on their digital equity plans as well as their BEAD plans. As I mentioned earlier, Maine was the first to get its digital equity plan approved by the NTIA just last month. So we're going to talk all about it. But the first thing I want to talk about is the background, a bit about what went into gathering the information that you need in order to create such a plan. And I'd love to learn a bit about what you learned about Maine's digital divide in that process.
Sure. excuse me. So I think the most important thing to know about the process of developing the state digital equity plan for Maine is that it was very much driven by our partners and engaged community members and folks who were most impacted by the digital divide. We were very lucky that so many of our organizational partners and state agency partners and individuals and communities really said yes every time we asked them to participate and provided a lot of the information that we needed to develop the plan. So we had, I think, six different stakeholder groups that were formed, including 13 regional and tribal partner organizations that we funded, who created coalitions in every region of the state and worked closely with the tribal communities. And each of those 13 partners created regional and tribal digital inclusion plans of their own, following the same model. So we had that as a significant input. We had a broadband working group, which was all of our state agency partners who had some connection into the digital divide in Maine. We had a workforce advisory group. We did industry roundtables. And I think most importantly, we had significant input from folks who are most impacted by the digital divide through our focus groups, our Maine broadband survey, and through our community meetings. And luckily, because Maine Connectivity Authority is a new quasi-governmental entity, we didn't have relationships with individuals or Mainers or trust. So they might not come to a meeting that the Maine Connectivity Authority convened, but they certainly would come to one when they were invited by a trusted organization that they already know. So that was really the bread and butter of the process of creating our plan. I will say that we learned a lot about the digital divide in Maine, as all the states are learning a lot at this point. And I'm not sure that any of it was surprising, but I'll start with, for the audience, if you know anything about Maine, you know we're a very remote, rugged terrain, and it's difficult to build infrastructure here in an effective way and in an efficient way. So we know that we have about 5.6% of our locations in the state are completely without connection, and about 6.3% of those locations are unserved. So that adds up to somewhere around 75,000 locations that are either homes or businesses that do not have broadband access. So those are a priority. We also found out that affordability is really a challenge for everyone in Maine, and it's an even more significant challenge for the folks that we were most focused on. As you know, the Digital Equity Act says there are 8 significant, what they call covered populations, that all the states really need to pay attention to. And we found that all of those covered populations found the cost of service to be even bigger of a barrier than Mainers in general. We also found that those covered populations had less confidence in their digital skills across almost every category of digital skill that we asked people about, and that they had a tendency to not have enough devices in the home for the household, and that they found device access difficult because of the cost of those devices. And really across the board, universal concern about internet safety and the ability to protect personal data. And at the same time, we had, you know, very high percentages of folks worried about that issue who also couldn't name a tool or a resource that they might go to find support or to find training about how to protect themselves online. So that was a big, I think, red flag for us in the process. And lastly, many, many folks had experienced difficulty navigating government resources online or applying for programs online. And so we knew that we needed to think about creating resources or helping make our resources more inclusive and accessible to folks. So those are some of the things we learned. And essentially, it sort of hammered home for all of us that we can do lots of amazing work to get the wires to run by people's homes and get them connected to those wires. But if they can't afford the service or they don't really understand how to make the most of that internet access and don't feel safe making the most of that internet access or have a device that can allow them to do that, then that infrastructure investment is really a stranded investment, and it doesn't pay us back for all the hard work that we do to get those wires out there. So that was our learning journey in Maine.
Very succinctly put. Thank you for giving me all that background. It definitely sounds similar to what I'm hearing from other states in terms of what they're learning, but every state is also unique. The one thing I think about when it comes to Maine is I wonder if you ever get pushback from people in terms of even wanting to close the digital divide because you have so many lovely locations there that are great for disconnecting.
Oh, yes. Many people want to come to Maine to get away from it all. And we say, that's fine. You can turn your device off or not bring sharing it. Yes. But there are lots of reasons we need to have that access
of course.
Available regardless.
Yes. So let's talk about how you're going to address all of those unique issues that you mentioned. Let's talk about what your overall goal is of the digital equity plan and the steps that you're planning to take to get there.
Yes, definitely. Well, I think that we will say, and many of the states will say, that one of the best parts of doing digital equity planning was just identifying the assets and the resources that we have in the state. So it was so valuable to have that be part of the planning process. We found that we have some core digital inclusion partners. We have some amazing networks of organizations that are already working closely and have trusted relationships with the folks that we need to reach. And we just have sort of a culture of community broadband that we're building from. So for many, many years, we had limited resources for broadband. So we had lots of communities who were engaging in planning and thinking about, if we get a broadband connection, what would we do with it? And how would we maximize that connection? So all of those things were really helpful to think about in creating our strategy. And I want to talk about our goals, not in terms of the numbers and the measurable objectives, but more what we hope that outcome is at the end. Yeah. The outcome is really that we are able to show that we maximize this infrastructure investment, that people are able to use their networks and that they are using them in meaningful ways and they feel comfortable doing that. To access education or telehealth or to work remotely or any number of things that really improve our quality of life. We also hope that an outcome is that we build a really healthy ecosystem of organizations that are engaged in this work, are thinking about how digital inclusion impacts the work they're already doing, and are able to sustain it over a long period of time. Because an essential challenge for the states is, this is a 5-year period of time when we will have funding for organizations and programs, but we really have to think about what happens after that funding is gone. And then lastly, we just want to have a broad understanding of digital inclusion and digital equity in Maine and really allow that awareness to embed digital inclusion into our existing systems and programs and policies, because that, again, will be part of the way that we sustain this work over the long term. So those are ultimate outcomes. We did structure our plan to have 5 key strategies, really thinking of those outcomes in the end. The first one is about building the base to support digital equity in Maine long term. And so that means ensuring that we fund staff through our state broadband office who just think about digital equity, that we support a coalition of organizations and keep them connected to one another, and that we really invest in some of the tools that will help us build awareness, such as our online digital equity asset inventory, which will have a really amazing name when we actually launch that tool. The second strategy was really taking advantage of all those organizations that we found that will be able to do some of this work. And it's about leveraging partnerships to reach the places we need to reach and the people we need to reach. And within that strategy, we're thinking about developing our digital equity grant program to fund lots of different organizations and programs, focusing specifically on folks who are incarcerated or in reentry, and focusing on the tribal communities, as well as investments in community anchor institutions around the state. The third strategy is about affordability, which of course was a centerpiece of our work, and I'm sure a priority for all of the other states. And the Affordable Connectivity Program was really a primary piece of that strategy. So we do need to, in the event that the Affordable Connectivity Program goes away temporarily or permanently, we really need to think about what a state solution is, or whether there is another federal solution that we can work towards. But the other thing we'll do in our affordability strategy is really focus on increasing connectivity for folks who live in subsidized and affordable housing, which we know is an enormous challenge in Maine, as it is in other places. The fourth strategy is about our statewide education and informational campaigns. We think it's really important that we have concerted effort to have devices donated for refurbishment. So we're building a sustainable system of device access and not just buying new devices every few years and continuing to distribute them to those who need them. So that will be a big focus, and also a statewide internet safety campaign. And there's lots of things in that fourth strategy that we think are really important for the state to do in particular. And the last strategy is really about that sustainability measure. So thinking about raising funds from philanthropy, from the private sector, from lots of other funding sources to create a digital equity fund that matches the federal funding, and identifying really policies that we might be able to put in place that would help sustain digital inclusion in the long term. And of course, continue to do education of our policymakers in the state so that they know how digital inclusion and digital equity are connected to everything else that we're doing across the state. So it's a lot. There's a lot there. We're really excited to get started on that work.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's all really important. You know, I know we only have a few more minutes here, so I want to ask you about the NTIA approval, but just a quick follow-up. You know, you mentioned getting philanthropy support and some other matching funds. And you also mentioned, you know, the ACP, if it goes away, having to deal with figure out a state solution. With the unpredictability of the federal government, do you ever think about, does it make sense to figure this out in state and not even have to worry if the government is going to come through with an ACP or otherwise in the future?
Yes, we certainly think that a state level solution is on the table. For Maine and for many other states, that would be a significantly difficult lift. And we haven't been successful in that type of program in other areas, such as our heating assistance programs or our programs supporting folks in Lifeline or our electricity subsidies. So we definitely think that is on the table, but we think it's a much more efficient and effective solution if we keep the program we have that we know is working, and tweak it in the ways that we need to, but ensure that it's funded long term. So,
makes
keeping
sense.
That option on the table.
Yeah.
But hopefully don't have to go there. We'll see.
That would be great. Yes, indeed. Okay. So before I go off on a tangent yelling about the ACP, which is one of my favorite things to do, let me ask you about this NTIA approval, which you guys got last month. So what does that actually do? Did you get access to funds? What happens once the NTIA blesses your digital equity plan?
Well, the first thing is you get to celebrate and say thank you to all of our partners, which has been really exciting. But the most important thing about the acceptance of the plan is that it means we can shift both mentally and in practice into implementation of the plan. So we still don't know the details for how the states will apply for the implementation funding. We're waiting for that notice of funding opportunity, hopefully by the end of March.
Okay.
And once we have that notice of funding opportunity, we'll then have 60 days to apply for those funds based on what's in our digital equity plan. So there's a close connection. And we're just waiting for the NOFO to better understand what the eligible uses are, over what period of time we'll be able to receive the funding, and what that means for the organizations that we might then support through our own grant programs. The other thing that we're doing in Maine is not waiting for that NTIA funding and really moving some of our work forward throughout the course of this year as to keep the momentum going and to really build into that full implementation process. So our regional and tribal broadband partners, we have funded for a second year, and they are doing digital inclusion work all around the state, focused on their regional plans. We will be awarding a first round of what we call connectivity hub grants in June. And those will be investing in those community anchor institutions that are not just doing digital inclusion work to support folks in their communities, but also thinking about educational programming, workforce training, and telehealth and health monitoring programming. So not just are we highly connected, can we get access to devices and technical support and digital skills, but what does that mean for our quality of life? So we're really excited about the connectivity hubs. We also have a second annual digital equity workshop coming up, and we're looking at some pilot programs to invest in some of that initial capacity to increase our ability to refurbish devices, get some more digital skills educators on the ground supporting all this increased demand, and a potential pilot program around affordable housing so we can really understand what a larger program should look like when we're ready to launch that in the next year or two.
Excellent. And how many people do you work with? Who's doing all this work?
Well, Maine Connectivity Authority is very lucky that the governor and the legislature were really thinking ahead about how to create a nimble, flexible, proactive organization. So we sit a little bit outside state government. We're a quasi-governmental entity, and that has allowed us to move fairly quickly to staff up in terms of capacity. So we have, I think, just over 20 staff now. And most of the work that's happening to implement the plan is, of course, within this team that I described earlier. So it's our digital equity manager and myself, our community and regional senior partnerships manager, and our policy and state agency partnerships manager. So we're going to be a very busy team, but we're very excited about having that opportunity to get things moving.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you get back to doing all of that extremely important work with those fantastic people. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about all of this. And I hope you'll come back later on and tell us how great it's all going.
I definitely will. Thanks for having me, Nicole.
My pleasure. Thank you again, Maggie, for joining me. Thank you as well to our producer, Pierre Landrio, for making this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for more episodes of The Divide, as well as interviews and insights from the Light Reading team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.